Welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show with Steve and Trish. Trish, I have a confession to make.
Ooh, confessions. Good.
It's not that juicy.
It sounds juicy. It sounds salacious. What do you got?
It's awful. I admit, Trish, for breakfast today, I had some Pop-Tarts this morning.
Oh, is that confession worthy? Is that a bad thing?
No, I'm not ashamed at all. But here's my question for you, Trish.
Okay.
What is the kid food or junk type food you will still admit to liking as an adult?
That's a good question. I think because you said Pop-Tarts, that's coming to mind. I am still good. Now, let me just clarify though. I don't like just any kind of Pop-Tarts. I think some of them are pretty sweet and maybe not so great. I'm a fan of the frosted strawberry and I like it microwaved, not in the toaster.
Now that's controversial.
I know, right? So yes, a microwaved, frosted strawberry, I would have to admit to. And maybe once in a while, a few bites of, my son really loves the frosted flakes. Mm-hmm. So I might have a bite or two of that once in a while.
I still eat Spam. I'm not ashamed at all to say it. In fact, I might have some of that later today. All right. Good stuff. Hey, Trish, we know it's been crazy these last few months for everybody, every workplace, just every business, everything, right?
Yes.
We've all moved to just about 100% virtual or 100% virtual over these last few months. I mean, and every organization has had to adapt just really every process, right, to function in this new virtual environment. And one of the things that's changed certainly is for the organizations who have been and continue to still be hiring, and they have hiring goals and needs, that moving the entire hiring process, right, for the most part, or really in moving it all to a virtual process has had to happen for lots and lots of organizations as well. And that's what we're going to talk about today on the show, kind of this move to virtual hiring, some of the technology that supports virtual hiring, and just some of the developments in hiring technology as well that are super interesting. And our guest today is Vivek Ravishankar. Vivek is the CEO and co-founder of HackerRank, the platform used by over 7 million developers to hone their skills and is employed by 2,000 plus companies like Amazon, Lyft, LinkedIn, and Dropbox to recruit top technical talent. After graduating from NIT in India, Vivek worked as a software engineer at Amazon, where he spent hundreds of hours interviewing other developers to help bring efficiency, standardization, and inclusivity to the technical hiring process. He co-founded HackerRank, the first Indian startup to graduate from Y Combinator. Vivek, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Steve and Trish, for inviting me.
It's our pleasure to have you. Vivek, for folks in the HR space who listen to the show, just maybe give, and maybe for me too, I've heard of it. Tell me what Y Combinator is. I know kind of what it is, but can you maybe just start with that?
Sure. Yeah, Y Combinator is a startup in itself, which actually funds other startups twice a year. They fund a small amount of money, typically anywhere between $20,000 to $30,000 twice a year for a large number of startups. Typically, they do about 100 investments a year.
Okay.
And it is a pretty prestigious accelerator where you get a lot of inputs from mentors, from advisors to get you off the ground. And then it's on you to go ahead and raise another round of funding and continue to build your company.
All right, right. And so you guys went through that process, and that I imagine that helped you quite a bit in the early days of HackerRank.
Definitely. I think it was a life-turning moment for us as a company. I mean, we were, I don't want to make this as like some heroic story where we were just bankrupt and you were just on the road and something, but like, you know, to some degree we were. We started the company and for the first couple of years, nothing really worked. In 2011, we came here for the Y Combinator program. And the interesting part is the interview for Y Combinator is only 10 minutes and they decide whether they're going to fund you or not. So that was my first trip to the US, that's first time to America. And so I flew in from India for a 10 minute interview.
Wow.
Unfortunately we got in, otherwise it would be the worst flight trip ever. You take a 20 hour flight and get kicked out of the country after 10 minutes. That should be pretty bad.
That'd be a rough flight back, yeah.
I feel a little bit like Shark Tank, right? Where it's make or break that pitch, right? You must have done pretty well.
Absolutely. You know, what's the most interesting thing that I learned from that was I did not expect that we would actually get in. And so I was very free. I was not in any kind of pressure or that I have to win this or that I had to get it. I was just like myself. And it turns out that it actually works for most of the times.
You know, that's interesting. I was actually on Twitter this morning and someone was asking like, what would be advice that you would give maybe your younger self or someone who's maybe just coming out of university? And I think what you just said is maybe one of those big pieces of advice, right? It's whenever you're just yourself and you're not trying to sort of put on an act, things tend to work out usually if you're, especially if you're in a case of trying to sell yourself or your ideas and what you find interesting, because that passion kind of comes through, I'm sure. So yeah, great advice.
Absolutely. I didn't intend that to be an advice, but sure, if you need it, feel free to. Yeah.
It works.
Well, thank you, Vivek, for sharing some of that. I just, you know, every so often, and Trish knows this after hundreds of shows, something in the bio of the guest catches me. And then I just want to talk about that for a while. And I don't think we've ever talked about that or really talked too much about kind of the startup world and how some of that works on the show. It's just not something we get into. And it was fascinating to me. So thanks, Vivek, for sharing some of that. Vivek, HackerRank is working with thousands of companies, as we said, and helping them with their hiring practices and processes. I'd love for you to maybe, before we get started on, you know, getting into some of the technology a little bit, is tell us about kind of helping your customers make this transition to pretty much a fully virtual hiring environment and set of hiring processes. How has that transition been for some of your customers? And maybe kind of talk us through a little bit of what they've gone through and how you guys are helping to support that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been a big transition. So just at a high level for people who are not familiar with HackerRank, we help companies hire developers through based on your skills versus pedigree. So that's our core philosophy with which we operate, with which we build products, with which we hire people. And what's been the biggest change that we saw? I mean, like, we started off the company with helping our customers identify good developers in the first stage of the interview process. Typically, the first stage of the interview process, always looking at your resume and then figuring out, hey, is this resume good? Like, do I know the school? Is this a good GPA? And frankly, that seemed wrong. That seemed like almost fundamentally unethical. why are you judging somebody based on a piece of paper and then figuring out whether this person gets an opportunity or not? So we definitely changed the game on that, where a lot of our customers adopted our skill-based assessment, where the first step of the interview process was actually based on, not based on resume or whatever you've written on the piece of paper, but hey, here is a coding challenge and tell me if you have the skills to do that or not. That was a big transformation which got us off the ground, and we got a lot of customers, we grew our company, and we're continuing to grow. But what we're starting to see happen now in this whole setup of remote hiring or remote work is, even though we solved a good amount of bias issues and stuff on the screening stage, there used to still be a lot of bias and non-standard processes that you used to do during the on-site interviews when people actually had an on-site session. And it usually took the form of, I'm not even prepared for the interview. I would just wing it. I will come into the conference room and ask whatever I feel like asking, or you would ask the candidate to code on a whiteboard, which, by the way, nobody codes on a whiteboard on a day-to-day basis. So why do you give a tool that somebody is not even familiar with? So there was just a lot of bias. And our next phase of evolution of the hiring solution was, hey, how do we now standardize the interview process, like what we have actually done on the first stage of the process on screening? And COVID, for whatever reason, has really accelerated that process. Right now, companies are almost forced to have a standardized hiring process. And I'll tell you why. When you had an on-site session, you typically had somebody walking up to the conference room, waiting for your peer to complete the interview. And then as he or she walks by, you're just going to ask, hey, what did you think of this candidate? What did you interview this person on? What should I talk to this person and stuff? Right now, there are no hallway conversations. It's zero. You have a calendar invite, and you click on it, you jump on an interview. And so unless and otherwise you're clearly prepared on what skills you need to assess this person on, how do you assess those skills? How do you determine whether this is a strong yes or a no? Unless and otherwise you put in all of the structure, you're not going to have a good interview process, which means you can't get the confidence of whether you need to hire this person or not, because you're not meeting the candidates in person these days. So it's almost completely shifted companies thinking about making sure that you have a structured process, which in itself has resulted in a lot of bias that has actually completely gone out of the window. And then on the other side of the equation on candidates, this is one of my favorite transformations that we're seeing happen from our customers. I always believe that the purpose of the interview is to figure out what the best version of the candidate looks like. Oftentimes, like companies have this notion of, hey, I want to prove that I'm smart and I'm going to stump you with this really hard question so that you can go around talking to your peers saying, wow, that was just a really hard interview to do. Guess what? You're not going to hire anybody with that. So it's a lose-lose situation. But now companies are actually forced to have prepared candidates. Hey, these are the tools that we're going to use. These are the rounds that you're going to be interviewed on. These are the skills that you're going to be interviewed on. Here are some prep docs and prep materials for you to go ahead and prepare yourself for the interview that we can truly understand what your best version looks like. So those are huge changes that we're seeing in our customers.
You know, I like that, Vivek, because I think a lot of times when you're interviewing as the candidate, you feel like maybe they're trying to trick you, right? They're again, to your point, maybe just trying to show how smart they are or whatnot. But really it is about sort of can that candidate demonstrate their ability to think around different types of questions and scenarios. And I like kind of that little real world aspect that you talked about in the questioning that comes about. What kind of feedback do you hear from the candidates, if any, or even if that's coming through the employers that are using HackerRank? Are you getting different reactions from the people who are actually going through the process?
Sure. I think the every system will have pros and cons. I think the pros for this system that I hear from candidates are the fact that it's much more natural for them, because you don't, like I mentioned, you don't have whiteboards or anything. You just like jump onto a collaborative programming editor, you code, you actually are able to share your screen and show your code. Hey, this is how my app works. It is much more real world. It is closer to what you would do on a day-to-day basis. The second thing that I hear from candidates is they suddenly feel a level of preparedness before they go to the interview, because they kind of know these are the skills that I'm going to be assessed on, and here are the prep docs. I actually got this from the companies directly. So they feel more confident going into the interview session, which is very, very good to see. And the confidence, of course, translates a lot into the way that you perform. The cons or things that they miss is getting a feel of the office, getting a feel of the team. It's very, very hard to do that in a remote interview, in a remote session. Culture is an overused word, which has hundreds of definitions from different people. But just to get a sense of, hey, what is it like to work in the company? How do your teams interact? What works? What does not work? Am I actually a good fit or not? You can try to get a lot of those things on a video call, but nothing like meeting in person to get a real sense of, hey, can you and I hit it off? And like, can we actually work together well? And so those are some of the things that you can't achieve in a remote setting. So that's what I would say are pros and cons. But net, I would say developers are happy. We measure this index called DLI. It's called Developer Love Index. That's like a core metric that we measure in a company. That's starting to go up. So it seems like people are really liking this new format.
Vivek, over time when you're working with customers, and you've got some large customers that we mentioned in the intro, do they find over time that transitioning to some of these processes, these collaborative kind of structured processes, can they report back that this is actually resulting in improvements in the metrics that we're measuring? And, you know, the various metrics could be just time to hire and cost per hire, but also quality of hire. I mean, can we look sort of a before and after and say, yeah, this actually does help us make become more effective at hiring and actually result in better hiring?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Steve. And I mean, you've been in this industry for some time. The metrics are the bane of existence of HR tech. It's just like insanely hard to get like good funnel data, good correlation data on like, hey, how do your interviews connect with performance of candidates once the person is hired and stuff. We've been trying our best to do that. I would say anecdotally, it results in a much better outcome that we have heard from customers. I would love to have given you a very scientific, statistically rigorous proof of, hey, here is, you know, given if you follow all of these things, you're going to get like a high performance. But I don't have that level of rigor. But I can tell you this, the fact that you're conducting your interviews in a much more structured way reduces your confirmation bias to a huge degree. You know, oftentimes when you don't have a structure, what you're really trying to get out of the candidate is you already have an impression about the candidate, whether that's just the way this person walks into the room or the first couple of answers that this candidate gives, or by looking at the resume or doing something else, you already have an impression. And all you're trying to do during an interview process is to confirm whether your impression is true or not by asking questions. But once you put a structured hat, you are no longer sort of like going to veer off on the tangent. You're going to say, look, here are the skills. Make sure this person has those skills. And I'm not interested in trying to figure out whether your impression is accurate or not, but more interested in objectively evaluating the skills. That has actually resulted at least much better debrief sessions, because it's way more objective on evaluation as opposed to, oh yeah, I felt good interviewing this candidate, so we need to make an offer. I mean, like, that's not helpful.
Yeah, Vivek, I think that's a great point. And I think one of the other benefits of that structured process is kind of in that debrief side, what you said, where in the past we might, like, Trish might interview a candidate, I might interview a candidate separately, and we would maybe have a debrief session together. So what did you think of that candidate? And we didn't ask the same questions. We weren't looking for the same characteristics. We weren't really trying to hone in on what's, we might have been just approaching it in completely different ways. And I also think that's a huge problem, and it's always been a problem, right? Because we're looking through our own, as you said, our own through our own biases, through our own lens, and very subjective ways of evaluating.
I think
too, when you were talking about just in terms of having the metrics, maybe when Steve asked about performance tying to those hires, I think part of that does fall onto the shoulders of the HR teams or even the hiring teams, because that step isn't always followed through at the organizational level. And so you may have technology that supports it and actually encourages that, but that's something too, I think over time, HR teams can get a little bit better at. Because a lot of times too, I've worked in many places where HR and recruiting are one in the same team, but I've also worked at places where it's two separate teams. And so again, if you're thinking of it, like once the handoff comes and you're in human resources, you think, well, they're already hired. I don't really need to go revisit how that occurred. Yeah. I'm just taking them over today. And that's, I can tell you, having led that sort of a team, it's very frustrating because you can't ever get the metrics then, because no one then on the HR team really cares to go back and figure that out, right? There's no benefit for them to spend the time to do it. So it's kind of a vicious circle, probably asking you those kinds of questions, because you probably get it different from every single customer, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, I think from a very philosophical point of view, you structured interviews are way better than unstructured interviews. So if you can align on that, then the question is, how do you implement that in a way that it actually gets you the right results as defined by maybe even tenure? You know, forget performance, like tenure should be easy. That should be easily calculated. You can easily calculate that. So those are some of the aspects that we're actually working on with customers.
Hey, Steve, listen, I think this is such a fascinating conversation. Obviously, we're going and going. I do want to take just a moment and take a break and thank our generous sponsors who make the show possible, if you don't mind if I break in with that. So
yes.
I want to first and foremost say that this episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by our friends at Paychex, who are one of the leading providers of HR, payroll, retirement, and insurance solutions for businesses of all sizes. Paychex also hosts podcasts that the audience may find interesting. Their HR Leadership Series provides insights around the latest trends in our profession, and it features a variety of expert guests and influencers, including both of us. We were on, about a month or so ago?
Yeah, it's probably a couple months ago now.
I know, time flies, right? It's sincerely a really, really great show, and they spend a lot of time prepping for it. So I think you'll find that it's unlike any other HR podcast out there. So high praise for what they're creating. They have a business series which features conversations right now with business owners and Paychex experts around issues of the day, including the challenges that are being faced around the current pandemic. So you can listen and subscribe to that at paychex.com/podcasts or on your favorite podcast platform. And then the other great sponsor we have that we've been working with is WorkHuman. And we actually, I don't even think it's run yet, we actually just recorded a show with Eric Mosley, the CEO of WorkHuman. And so we have that to look forward to. But we talked about many things they've been up to. But one is something they've just introduced, which is called Mood Tracker. And that is a free modern voice of the employee. It's a tool that's built by their data scientists, making it fast, easy, and actionable to get to the heart of your organizational issues. So you can check that out. It's something we're using here at H3HR Advisors, and you can find that at workhuman.com/moodtracker.
Trish, I got my email from Mood Tracker for my check-in. I didn't do it yet, though. I was not in a really great mood maybe that day, and I didn't
want my answers
to reflect the bad mood I was in. So
you have to answer honestly, because that's the thing. You know what? I think with Mood Tracker, it's you really want to know. You want to know, especially in a time of a pandemic or any kind of a crisis, right? What your employees are really feeling. Yeah. So, on those days when you're not feeling quite as engaged or quite as happy or whatever, whatever you're feeling, it's all important, right? And so human resource leaders and business owners can really do quite a bit more, I think, around, you know, just how they give back to the employees and support them if they really know what your moods are.
Yeah. Right? So I'll do it today. I'm on it.
Please do it today. No, it sounds like you're in a good mood today. See, now we have a whole skewed view.
I'm not sure why. all right, let's get back to Vivek. Vivek, hey, there's a couple other things we wanted to hit on with you while we had your time today. And one is really interesting to me, and I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm like a little bit of a labor market geek. And one of the things that's interesting to me is if in COVID and everybody's gone to work remotely and hiring has gone remote and just everything has had a transition to remote, many companies, including some tech companies, I know you work with a lot of tech companies, have kind of cast their line out and said, you know, we may stay remote for a long time, maybe forever. And I'd love for you to comment on that, maybe just from your perspective with customers you're working with at HackerRank, but even your own perspective as someone who's, you know, running a technology company, and how that might impact talent acquisition, where all of a sudden we don't have to have someone who lives in the Bay Area or lives in New York City, or we don't have to require them to relocate to those places. What does kind of talent acquisition maybe look like longer term in a world where many, many more of us will be working and companies be working fully remote for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think first and foremost, everyone has been surprised on the level of productivity that you can achieve with remote work. I think people were skeptical a lot, whether is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Am I going to see a dip? Are people going to leave? And unfortunately, a lot of companies had to let go of people because their business got severely impacted, which is definitely very, very unfortunate. But at a very macro level, people have adjusted to remote work pretty good. I mean, we did not see a miss in the beat for the entire quarter. In fact, we had one of our best quarters, the one that just ended. But I think there are other issues or areas of work that we need to do in order for you to make remote work actually work. There is definitely an elevated levels of mental health, mental awareness issues that have cropped up a lot more. So you need to be careful about that. And a lot of companies take onboarding for granted, because you, as a new hire, if you were to just like come into the office, you can just learn a lot through osmosis, just like getting to know people, sitting on the lunch table and talking to others. But right now, if you're in remote work, unless you have a Zoom meeting set up, there is nothing else that you can actually do except focus on your work. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on onboarding, making sure that the new hire feels as a part of the team. So unless you really embrace, and also there are like a bunch of nuances, like for example, if you went ahead with the hybrid approach of part of the team being in office, part of the team being remote, I mean, you're going to create like two camps within your organization. Oh, I'm part of the remote culture. The others are part of the in-office culture. And when you have a meeting, you're going to have like weird dynamics that's going to happen. So you need, if you're embracing remote, if you want to go remote, embrace remote completely. Just make it very, very clear that, hey, we're going to follow a written documentation culture. We're not going to jump on like meetings all the time. There's a lot of things that we need to do asynchronously. There's a lot of things that we need to do during onboarding, making sure it's all documented. There's a lot of fundamental things that you need to change in the company. The fabric of the company needs to change in order for you to make remote work actually happen. Now, to your question on the long-term impact, I think it's going to be a hugely net positive gain. We're going to go through a trough of sorrow because people will find it very hard to transition, and they go to, some of them might give up, man, this is just not working. But then eventually we're going to have the fundamental views of workplace is going to change. I mean, Steve, just think about it. Your talent pool just got 10 times bigger, if not 100x. You were forced to hire people within the 10 or 20 mile radius, paying twice the amount of salary that you would pay on an average because there's high demand for engineers within that radius. And now suddenly you get to see, wow, like my talent is everywhere and I'm not like going to shell out like $300,000 for a new grad because of the crazy bonus structures or whatever the large companies give. And I'm able to attract great talent. So I think it's going to fundamentally have a huge shift. It is also going to have a very hugely positive impact on the way that you build your diverse teams. I think a lot of companies care about diversity and they care about it from the right angle as well, which is like, hey, if you're going to build a product that's going to be used by the entire world, we can't just be a bunch of engineers sitting in the Bay Area trying to design the product for the billion population that is sitting across different countries, like different cultures and stuff. We need to fundamentally have a diverse school of thought as we build products for the globe. So, but it's not that companies are not able to build diverse teams because they don't know that this is needed. It's because it comes back to the talent constraint, talent pool constraint. I'm just limited by my 10 to 20 mile radius. And now if you just open it up, that fundamentally changes a lot of things. So I do believe you're going to see way more diverse teams come into play. The fact that you're going to have a much more structured process, similar to the blind audition that happens in an orchestra where you're going to play behind a closed curtain, and I don't know your gender, I don't know your race, and I'm just going to hire you based on how well you play. So when you have like a structured interview process, like a blind audition process, like these things are going to have a very, very dynamic workforce that is going to result in great products being built. So I do think this is the state long-term. And by the way, the other point that I would like to make on this is if when companies like Facebook and Shopify and Square and Coinbase, and a lot of them have publicly come out and said, look, we're going to be a remote first company. I mean, you don't have many other options. like just think about it. If I'm Google and Facebook is saying I'm going to go remote first. And by the way, like the large tech companies are in everyone's toes. Like, you know, it's not like Facebook is a social network company. They're an e-commerce. It's not Amazon. It's not an e-commerce company. Amazon is competing with Netflix. Well, Amazon's in like every industry, probably.
Amazon competes with everyone. Yeah.
Exactly. They might even do a podcast next. You never know. But if you just think about it, like every large tech company is in every industry. Apple just launched a credit card. So you don't know whether Apple is a consumer company or a fintech company. So then the question really becomes, the bottleneck is the amount of technical talent that you can go ahead and hire to make that happen, because your ambition is kind of endless. And so Facebook is saying, I'm going to go remote first. What they're essentially signaling is, I have an unfair advantage of talent that I can access through the entire world, which you don't have if you don't embrace remote first. So it's going to have like a huge cascading effect throughout the entire tech industry, where everybody's going to embrace remote first. But there's a lot of fundamental changes that you need to make within the company, like onboarding, documentation, and all of the cultural, behavioral changes that you need to do in order for it to be a successful one.
Fascinating. I was just going to say, especially on the onboarding, I mean, Vivek, I normally take notes, but I was taking a ton of notes on what you were saying, because I think that's the first time I've heard anyone across our industry truly articulating that is an area of need, because of the fact that you are missing out. I liked how you talked about the sort of the learning through osmosis. And you're right. I think when I when you were saying that, I was thinking back to one of the first jobs I took that was remote. And that was the biggest challenge. It was coming into a leadership team at a very high level role myself, where you don't get that learning in the hallway, or like you said, around the lunch table, right? And so having to figure out how a company works and what the politics are and, you know, who you can trust and who you can't trust, you lose out on all of those cues if you are remote. So, oh, that's good stuff. That's like for a whole nother show, actually. But thank you for that. And then I also, I liked when you talked about talent being everywhere and kind of those examples are real, where you're right. That is the competitive advantage right now. If you're fast to move, I think too, from a candidate perspective, when I think back to maybe times where I was looking for work years ago, and I would, you know, you'd go on a job board maybe, and it always required you to put in the location, and you'd search like nationwide or something, and there would be very few jobs that would show up as nationwide. Well, now it's global, right? So the opportunities, I guess, are more, more for, you know, individual candidates as well. So yeah, good stuff to think about.
Vivek, I've got just one more question for me. And this was not in the notes, but I just thought of it. So I'm going to ask it anyway. If it's too difficult, we'll edit it out later, Vivek. But here's my question. You work with lots and lots of organizations, many of whom are hiring lots and lots of technical people. They're very strong at it. They're getting better at it. They're using platforms like HackerRank to become more efficient, more effective, and reduce bias, et cetera. But other organizations maybe don't hire as many technical people, occasionally smaller organizations, maybe not as experienced at it. I'd love for you to give one or two kind of ideas or thoughts on, like, what's the key to a good technical hire? What are some things to look for, and maybe some things that, you know, really aren't that important, but people might consider? You mentioned at the top, maybe degree and grade point average maybe don't necessarily mean anything, or are not reflective of their ability to perform. But if I was an HR leader, who the type of person who listens to the show, and we maybe only hire a couple of technical people every year, what are some ideas or thoughts on making those hires, just getting better at making those kinds of hires?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. As much as our company name is HackerRank, there is no global ranking of developers. Which is to say, here is the best developer in the world. I don't think that even makes any sense. I think the question really is, does this developer fit with your organization? And is this the developer best for your company? And I think a lot of people just assume, oh, Google is a great technology company, so, and they must be hiring great developers for sure. So why don't we just copy their interview process and let's also hire those great developers? I mean, guess what? Like, maybe your company is not working on trying to search a billion pages every minute and trying to crawl all of those things. Maybe you don't need that level of technical expertise. Maybe you need expertise in something else, an ability for you to build an app, or, like, you know, whatever it is. Like, you probably have different expertise that you need to focus on. So I think the high order bit for companies to focus on is, what do you really need in a developer? And so the way that we try to work with customers is, we try to sort of bucket into a few things. There are a very broad-based buckets of skills that you're going to look for in a developer. And one is problem solving, which is ability for you to have a problem that you can break it into sub-problems and go ahead and solve. It's just test for your general aptitude and programming proficiency and others. The second one is your real-world knowledge, which is, can you build an app? Can you code something on a real code base? The third one is your ability to architect a system, your system design. And the fourth one is the ability for you to fit well within the culture of the company. And by the way, culture, again, like I mentioned, is the most, I would say, like, misused word across the entire industry, because people have different meanings for that. This is not like, oh, can I go and get a beer with this person? It's you have to have a much better way of operationalizing the culture of your organization. And then the question becomes, okay, which areas would you put weights in terms of what kind of developer do you need?
Right.
And what are the skill sets in each of these buckets? For example, if you're going to work at VMware, which is the customer, as a kernel engineer, I would actually say your knowledge of C, the language C, should be so, so high, because you're working directly on the kernel. It should be like off the charts. But if you're going to hire somebody who needs to make your website pretty, okay, maybe I don't need that level of knowledge of the C C or C++. I don't need that level of language proficiency. Maybe I need to assess this person on how good are you in React, and maybe a little bit way more on React versus actually on the problem solving and language proficiency aspects of it on the algorithm side of it. So I think it's very, very important. It's very custom to companies. People don't give a lot of thought. We give a framework and we work to make sure that customers have a good idea of what makes a great engineer for the organization.
Vivek, thanks for addressing that. Really interesting too, because we development and technical hiring, seem to be one of those areas where that kind of resume inflation or qualification inflation was rampant, right? Like things, we all know the old joke about, job descriptions that said 5 years of programming language in a certain language that has only been in public domain for 3 years, those kinds of things, right? And that was rampant in the industry. And it's good to know that you guys are working with companies to try to get past some of those things and focus on the things that's really, really important, really, really interesting.
You know what too, Steve? I think sometimes working in human resources or in talent acquisition, sometimes you're not as versed in all of the skills that are required for that position in your organization. And that can be a detriment too. So I think if you're working with Hacker Lab or something like that, that type of a tool can actually help you source those candidates that you might not have such a good understanding of the differences between some of those languages, for example, or the skills that might be needed. So they might be looking at like Google engineers in their resume, and it's like, to Vivek's, point, it's not, that might not even be what you're really needing. So part of it too is a little bit on, education that might be missing from the talent acquisition team or the HR team, I think.
Yeah, it's super difficult. And it's a great illustration of kind of what companies like HackerRank exist for. This is a hard thing. Hiring is hard in general. Technical hiring is maybe even harder, right? For some of the reasons we've talked about, and that reason as well, Trish, that
I agree.
Lots of HR and recruiting people just don't have that background that they need.
Vivek, I'd put that up with like the healthcare too. Like, it'd be like trying to hire different types of nurses or doctors. I mean, it becomes so specialized that sometimes you don't even understand all of the nuances of the role of what's needed. And I do feel like what HackerRank is doing is sort of addressing that from a technical standpoint, which is really helpful.
Vivek, we've held you up for quite a while today, so I do want to cut you loose here in a second, but just maybe if you could, to the extent you'd like to, I saw a demo from a couple of the folks at HackerRank just the other day, so really cool stuff coming down the pipeline. Maybe you want to just share a little bit about kind of what's coming up from HackerRank.
Yeah, no, happy to. I think we've definitely evolved our product a lot. Like I mentioned, we started off helping our customers screen developers better, then we evolved into a full-on interview solution, which right now powers all the interviews, given all interviews are virtual and remote right now, whether that is on a pair programming, collaborative code session, or using a whiteboard, and connecting all of this into a nice skill-based candidate packet. We have fundamentally transformed the interview process for all of our customers, which is a big evolution. And the next big step or evolution that we're taking, which is not yet announced, but maybe it will be when this podcast goes live, is we're launching a new way to connect college grads to companies. It's called a virtual career fair. As you probably saw, colleges are going online. Companies want to hire new grads, but they're not going to go and visit colleges because of COVID. So how do you hire developers? How do you hire all these new grads this fall? So we're building a platform to connect new grad college students with companies and completely equalize the playing field. I'm very, very excited about this because I believe this will be a fundamental shift in the way that you even do university recruiting, because companies will start to realize, wow, I spent like $1 million going and visiting 10 schools, and there are 400 schools in America that can actually graduate students, and I can hire people across all of them at 1/10 of the cost sitting at home. I mean, what else do I want? I think this can be a hugely disruptive thing, which we're going to launch this fall. So very, very excited about that.
Yeah, awesome, Vivek. I'm going to say, I did have a demo the other day. I did not get a demo of the virtual career fair. So it was, so I'm excited to see that as
it's
well.
It's yet to be launched.
No, yeah. I know, but I did catch up. I'm a little geeky on this. So part of the demo, they were showing me some of the code pairing capability in the virtual kind of code interview. And there was some SQL code in there, and it brought back some flashbacks for me, and I'm trying to remember my SQL order of statements, Trish, I think I remember them. You ready?
Okay.
Trish, select from where, group by, having, order by. I think I got it right. I don't know.
That's awesome.
Throwing it out there.
Yeah. Got it. You got all the keywords. The SQL query might not work, but you got all the keywords.
I didn't ask. I actually didn't ask for anything.
That's
I just
great.
Know the order operation. Okay. Vivek, we'll let you go. So the website is hackerrank.com, right? That's where folks can go to learn more about many of the things we've talked about. That's where organizations are interested in this technology. You can go check it out. It is super cool. And I'm just saying that it's been a great conversation, of course, with Vivek talking about technical hiring and technology supporting technical hiring, but also kind of what's happening with remote work in the future. But the technology is awesome as well. So I'd encourage folks to check that out. And I want to say thanks, Vivek, for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much.
All right, Trish. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
I'll take us out. I don't
wait.
Have
we have one final question.
Do we?
You did not ask Vivek what his childhood breakfast of choice is. I think he's got to weigh in as we sign off.
Yeah. What is it, Vivek? What is there one little food from your childhood or some just bad food for you still admit to eating?
You know, I cannot eat a single meal without a side of chips.
Ah, there we go.
Even today.
Really?
Yeah. And of course, the potato chips and Lay's and stuff are not like very healthy.
Right.
So there is an alternate that my wife found. It's called veggie chips. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, I can deal with it because it's not as good as Lay's, but I need something crispy on the side.
There you go.
Otherwise, I can't have a single meal. So that is my wise.
I love that. That's great.
All right. With that said, with chips and waiting and Pop-Tarts or whatever else, that's it today from the HR Happy Hour Show. For our guest, Vivek Ravisankar from HackerRank, for Trish McFarland, have a great rest of the day. My name is Steve Bowes. We will see you next time, and bye for now.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.